FM 100.9.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. 38 days until Donald Trump is sworn in for a second term in the White House, he invited Chinese leader Xi Jinping to his inauguration, but sources tell ABC Xi will not accept. Trump's cabinet nominees continue to meet with lawmakers. ABC's Mary Bruce says the choice for Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth met with a Democrat for the first time, John Fetterman of Pennsylvania.
Fetterman, tight-lipped.
Are you considering voting for it?
So it's just like it's a conversation.
Are you open to supporting him, Senator?
Hegseth has been battling accusations of sexual misconduct, excessive drinking, and financial mismanagement. He's denied it all.
A Florida woman's been charged with threatening her insurance company after it denied her claim. Police say she echoed words that were written on the bullets that killed United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson. The man charged with killing Thompson, Luigi Mangione, was not a United Healthcare member, according to the company. He remains in custody in Pennsylvania. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulatz. With the frigid temperatures and blustery winds, stay indoors if possible. Be sure your home emergency kit is stocked. You should keep your gas tank at least half full when temperatures are below zero. Also avoid carbon monoxide poisoning. Never heat your home with a gas stove top or oven. Check the batteries in your carbon monoxide detectors regularly. Make sure your pets are safe as well. Limit their time outdoors. If you must be outside in sub-zero weather, be sure you know the signs and symptoms of hypothermia. These include shivering, exhaustion, confusion, and slurred speech. Symptoms can look similar to intoxication. Call 911 if someone is exposed to cold temperatures and you see these symptoms. More housing is coming to Richland Center. A project to help meet the housing demand in Richland Center has been in the works for several years. Mayor Todd Coppernall is excited to see the Panorama Estate deal come to fruition.
This is really exciting, and I wanted to make sure the people of Richland Center heard this as soon as possible. The developers agreement, the revised, updated developers agreement for the Panorama Estates apartment project was signed by myself, Ashley Oliphant, the city administrator, and Dwayne Kleinsasser, who, of course, is the builder involved in the project. And this was a very long process. We had to work around the pandemic, which caused delays in the process. But we've done all of that, and this was reviewed legally and also a good financial review from the folks down at Ehlers. And everybody came to terms. The city council approved those terms, and we signed it yesterday.
The original plan called for building 2 and 3 to be built separately. The plan signed Wednesday calls for the buildings to be built simultaneously. Mayor Todd Coppernall would like to thank everyone who has been involved in getting this project underway. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
It's the Packers and the Seahawks Sunday night. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers take on the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday night football. Green Bay hoping some of their players are ready to return to action, like linebacker Edgerrin Cooper, who's been impressive as a rookie until he suffered a hamstring injury in practice 3 weeks ago.
It means a lot. It's been a long 3 weeks. I'm just ready to go out there and just play as hard as I could and make plays.
NBA, the Bucks are in Vegas. They face the Atlanta Hawks tomorrow at 3:30 in the NBA Cup semifinals. Women's college volleyball tonight, NCAA regionals, the Badgers in Lincoln, Nebraska, for a rematch with Texas A&M, a team they beat 2 months ago. Wisconsin C.C. Crawford asked how they've improved.
We've grown so much as a team, not only on the court, but off the court. One thing we worked on the beginning of the year was communication, and we've excelled in that. Obviously, we played them earlier in the season, but they're a different team now. It's been 2 months. Same thing for us. We're a different team now, so it'll be a fun matchup.
That's the Badgers' C.C. Crawford. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Partly cloudy today. We'll get to around 20 for a high this afternoon. Tonight becoming cloudy, 17 the low. Tomorrow, a little light snow in the morning, changing to rain by mid-morning with around a quarter inch possible by the time it ends tomorrow night. Our high tomorrow near 40. Sunday, cloudy with a high of 41. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Outside now, it's 2 below 0.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding a unicycle? Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe.
Here's why I'm glad I don't work in an office. My wife is always talking about, she's a teacher. They put donuts in the teacher's lounge, there's sweets, there's snacks. It wasn't that way here today, but Nikki keeps those Biscoff cookies out there. I probably ate 12 of those today. The phrase "you are what you eat" is very true, because I was sitting in the office earlier prepping the show and I felt kind of doughy and I'm like, I feel like a Biscoff cookie.
Nightlight with Pete Schwalbe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we will be recombobulating Dan Schaefer from the recombobulation area to break down all the news, and we'll wrap it up with "This Shouldn't Be a Thing." Join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. It's Friday, and so, you know, that means my co-host Sandy Williams is on board. Good morning to you, Sandy.
Good morning. It's a cold, chilly morning. It wakes you up. It was no problem at all opening my eyes quickly when I went outside. Sat into my frosty car.
Hey, Calvin, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. We made it to Friday, and I think it's supposed to be a tad warmer today.
Yeah, they're talking about possibly 50 on Monday.
Nothing strange about our weather.
No. We've got a lot to cover, as always, and if you don't know by now, that's my co-host, Sandy Williams. And, you know, Sandy, yeah, tell us a little bit about you, man. I know you don't like doing it, man, but give us a little background.
I really don't.
So I'll give a little background on Sandy Williams. Sandy Williams is a guy that I met at a coffee shop with a couple friends.
I was asking for money, wasn't I?
a couple friends of ours. And I used to do radio over on Brady Street. And after the radio show, I would walk down half a block to this little quaint coffee shop. And that's no longer there, apparently. And a couple of mutual friends of ours, I'd come over and we'd have breakfast and listen to them talk for the most part. And so Sandy was always there. He was a guy who was very quiet and didn't have opinions as far as I could see, not around those guys very much anyway. And so I'm sitting there and I'm wondering, this guy's sitting over here, he's quiet. And then one day those guys had the Vietnam veterans, wounded vets, and they had to go to an event at the war memorial. And so it's just Sandy and I left there. And so we're looking at each other and...
Yeah, well, you know, turns out he did have opinions.
Yeah. And Sandy got to talking and I was just like, wow, man, this guy who was never saying much of anything had an awful lot to say about a lot of things. And I remember saying, hey, man, you ever think about coming on radio?
Yeah, this was about 6 years ago, I think.
Yeah, and you were hesitant initially.
Yeah.
And I said, well, man, just, you know, come on.
I was in politics for a little while when early in my legal career, and then I spent a long time being a lawyer, but being a lawyer doing work that related to public policy. And I was a an economist by training in college, and I went to law and business school, and I've always been interested in public policy. So and
especially the energy sector.
Yeah. But I've always been so. Anyway, I appreciated the opportunity. I think my original discussions were a lot, much about the kind of the business history of Milwaukee and a bunch of, you know, like I said last show, I figured out I've been around for one third of the country's duration. You know, so I've lived through a lot. Which also gives you some perspective.
But you've also been engaged in a lot of different areas. Again, I think with all the different things you've done, you know the inner workings of government because you clearly, with all the different things in the private sector, you were in both the private sector and the public sector.
Yeah, I spent 20 years on the board of the Medical College of Wisconsin and got a learned enough about medicine to know that its system is badly broken.
Yeah, but, so it's important that people understand who Sandy Williams is, and so, you know, because we talk a lot about a lot of different things. You got a lot of opinions on a lot of things, and so I know the origin of Sandy Williams and why it's so important that you're on here with me two times a week, and many times people are hearing you give your opinions. They need to understand the magnitude of who the person is who's giving those opinions.
Well, they're just opinions, okay?
Now, so I know
everybody's
but
entitled to their own, so you give me the opportunity to present mine. That's I appreciate
yeah,
it.
But again, the fact of the matter is Sandy's not just a bump on the log. Anyway, let's speaking of opinions.
Speaking of bumps on logs.
Speaking of opinions.
Yeah.
Sandy, have you in that beautiful sky that you have over your property, over the river. Have you seen any drones floating around?
No, but I'm going to start looking, you know. Wow. You know, I've been hearing about drones over New Jersey. I don't know why New Jersey might be the proximate center for drone traffic. But, yeah, and the government's saying it's very interesting. It's sort of like that balloon that came from China that flew over. There are these drones. They aren't apparently from foreign governments. Who knows? I mean, they might well be U.S. government things that are flying around being tested, but or they might not be drones at all.
Well, the government is saying it's not us,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is not the military. They don't know who it is. I don't understand how, Sandy, with the technology that we have and what we can do, our nation, that we don't know whatever that is, right?
Well,
it's something that they want to keep secret.
They're investigating. Yeah, I might just be honest with you, all of that discussion strikes me as something that they're telling us it's not a problem, but we can't tell you what it is, but it's not a problem. Sounds like they know what it is, it's not a problem, but they aren't going to tell us.
It's not E.T.,
No, I don't think so. Yeah, E.T.'s coming home.
Yeah.
E.T.
so,
home.
So the amazing thing is, Sandy, the people who buy into it believe that they've been saying it forever, that these people are here and not people, whatever these things are, and the government is not telling us, and, you know, what is the name of that
The X-Files?
No. in Vegas.
David 1950s. Roslyn, New Mexico.
New Mexico. And so, you know, you hear all these different things. But it's things like that that the American people really get into, man.
Well, you know, because we learned with Vietnam primarily and after Vietnam that the government doesn't always tell us the truth, which lays open the possibility of speculation about everything, right? So the Kennedy assassination led very quickly to a view that we aren't getting the whole story, and then allowed people to make up whatever the story seemed to be rather than what we were hearing. And so it's very fruitful ground for speculation. It's kind of fun, you know, to connect the dots backwards and come up with some remarkable theory. And, you know, you used to go to the grocery store and you could see the National Enquirer, and the headlines on the National Enquirer were always conspiracy theories about whatever, you know?
You know, the reason that I wanted to at least begin what is going to be a very in-depth discussion about many different things, especially our government. Our government shouldn't have to tell you. Should the American people know everything that the government does?
Well, transparency is pretty important because the lack of transparency leads directly to what we just talked about. So if you don't have transparency, then you've got theories and conspiracy theories and speculation and paranoia. You know, it lays open all sorts of possibilities. So my theory is that transparency, wherever possible, needs to occur. And one of the problems we had after World War II is that national security became a matter of secrecy. And the government found it very convenient to wrap the secrecy label around as many things as possible because it's much easier to behave as a government in a non-controversial fashion if there's no information out there to create controversy. So, you know, I think that I'm glad that our Congress has watchdogs over the question of what it is that gets top secret status that is not told to the American people, because I think we should be told as much as possible. There obviously are some things that we can't know because they need to be secret. But, you know, it would be best if we lived in a world where the universe of things that needed to be secret was very small.
Well, you were in the government on a state level and working right with the governor of the state of Wisconsin. Were there ever times that there were conversations?
Well, sure. I mean, the Freedom of Information Act was passed in the 70s, okay? And it was passed in a response to the view that there was an awful lot of things that went on in government that weren't told to the people at local government at all levels. And so there were laws passed in the state of Wisconsin and federally that required the government to carry out its conduct in public or to make public whatever it is that was done that was a government function the definition of a public meeting in Wisconsin is, you know, it's vexing to the public officials because when two or three of them gather and talk, they realize, oh, my God, this is a public meeting. We've got to make sure we document it and it's available to the public. But it has helped because the press and others can now make demands to see under the Freedom of Information Act what goes on within government. And I'm all for it. I'm all for transparency.
You know, Sandy, we are going to be talking about the establishment and the tearing down of the government and institutions. And we just this conversation that we're having right now about the government being forthright with the American people and how important that is.
Yeah. I mean, suspicions by the American people have helped build this concept that the government is a problem, that it's a black hole, that it's a deep, you know, the notion of a deep state sounds like it's a secret state, okay? It's a place where secret things happen. And we'll talk about it at the end of the next segment. But, you know, I think that it's something important and has happened in politics and in our public concept of our government that has prompted something like Donald Trump getting elected.
So we're going to cover an awful lot of ground. It's clearly important that with this conversation that we're going to have an in-depth about our government and why, you know, we have the questions that we have as the American people. 855-752-4842, Sandy Williams on the Earl Ingram Show.
From the center, WRCE.
Civic Media, Wisconsin's source for real news and great conversation, offers podcasts of all of our daily shows online and on demand. Simply go to civicmedia.us, click on Daily Shows, and choose the podcast that you want to download. Shows are updated daily, or you can save them and listen all at once. Our podcasts are sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. You are an organ donor, right? Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Learn more at heroicdeed.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people.
We have state updates today, including North Carolina's Supreme Court race and a power grab by its legislature, ranked choice voting in Alaska, and more charges in Wisconsin for Donald Trump's fake elector scheme advisors. We reported December 11th that a GOP state Supreme Court candidate who lost by 734 votes and failed in two recounts asked the North Carolina Election Board to invalidate 60,000 voters. North Carolina Newsline reports that in a 3-2 vote Wednesday, the board rejected that request, though a court appeal is likely. Also December 11th, the North Carolina legislature overrode Governor Roy Cooper's veto of a bill designed to strip power from the incoming Democratic governor and attorney general. In an attempt to retain GOP power before it loses its supermajority, the authority to appoint election board members was shifted to the state auditor, a Republican. The attorney general was also stripped of any ability to bring suit against legislation proposed by the legislature. In Alaska, a recount of the attempted repeal of ranked choice voting and open primaries is complete. The repeal failed by 0.25%. In Wisconsin, 10 additional felony forgery charges were brought against Trump campaign advisors, attorney Jim Troupas, attorney Kenneth Chesbro, and Election Day director Mike Roman. We have links to more on all of these stories at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. You know, it's Friday. That means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. And so Sandy, the music.
Well, the music today is based on the epiphany I had that I want to talk about next, which is the establishment and the anti-establishment kind of movement that's adrift right now. And so the music all kind of relates to kicking at the establishment, whatever that is, you know. And the epiphany I had was I was listening to a discussion with Rahm Emanuel, and he was talking about, and he's always got very firm opinions, maybe not always correct, but he's very firm about them. And he was talking about how it is that this populist movement is really, as I agree, an anti-establishment movement, and that we have a drift right now, a great deal of anti-establishment.
So, Sandy, before you go any further, populist movement, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, Donald Trump is said to be a populist leader in this, and populism is a situation in which the people, sort of the grassroots, want to throw away government, essentially. They want to have a different approach to government. They want a much more direct connection to the leader and want the leader to represent their views. And so populist presidents tend to be people who have a grassroots kind of a connection, not necessarily through a party, okay? And so Donald Trump is sort of that person. I mean, he's sort of took over the Republican Party. He is the Republican Party, and the party, he's not courting the favor of the Republican Party. The Republican Party is courting his favor because of his apparent popularity with the people. So it's a reflection of popularity. But populist movements are frequently based upon the frustration of Tom, Dick, and Mary, of the people, about what their lives are like, okay? And when people are frustrated with their lives, they try to figure out what mechanism it is that's putting them in this constant position of frustration. What is the invisible power that seems to frustrate them? And usually that invisible power is denominated as the establishment being the people in positions of power who pull the levers. You know, they're faceless. You know, if you talk about the establishment, you're talking about a faceless group of people who seem to be in control of things. And they're operating and calling the social norms and requiring them. And what Rahm Emanuel was talking about is how it is that the people's vision of the establishment has changed dramatically, okay? After the collapse of the financial institutions in 2007, if you went out and asked people who was the establishment that they were angry with, they would have said to you, I'm angry with the financial community. I'm angry with the people who regulate the financial community. I'm angry with corporate America for putting us in this spot, okay? They've ruined my life. And so that was the establishment. And then come the COVID epidemic, and now it's the government who's shutting things down. It's the government who's telling you you have to wear a mask. It's the government who's telling you you can't travel when you want to travel. It's the government that's getting in your way and seems to be telling you everything that you need to do, and it seems to be a problem. And what's happened in that process is that for many people, the establishment has morphed from corporate America to the government. It's just what Ronald Reagan said. The government is your enemy. The government, the deep state, is this faceless entity that seems to be controlling something, you know, controlling your lives, maybe. And so people bought into the deep state concept because the deep state was another word for the establishment. And my view of things, now that I've kind of looked at it this way, is that we have two different views of the establishment running right now in America. The people who voted for Donald Trump believe that the establishment that is troubling them is the government. It's the deep state, and it needs to be dismantled because they're angry with the establishment because it's what's getting in their way and is frustrating them. The other half of America, literally, believes that the establishment is corporate America. And so we have callers who frequently call in and talk about corporatism and corporate America. And if you talk to the populist movement that supports Bernie Sanders, they would tell you that that's the establishment that we need to worry about. The money in politics, all driven by that form, that part of the establishment. So we have a division in America. We have a big anti-establishment movement. Half the people are against the establishment that is corporate America and money in politics. And a little bit more than half of America believes that the establishment is this government that they want to tear down. And tearing it down is manifest, I think, in what Donald Trump has been doing. The people he's appointed to his cabinet, the things they're talking about doing, all reflect this notion of attacking government and taking apart that establishment. But the thing we need to talk about is the extent to which actually carrying that out is going to be contrary to the interests of the Tom, Dick, and Marys who were frustrated by their situation and decided to embrace the concept that government was the establishment they wanted to take on.
So Tony says, what better conspiracy than the people leading the charge, and conspiracies are leading people away from the real corruption?
Yeah, I mean, like I said before, I think what's happened in a way, and I'm not sure it was orchestrated, but it's what happened, is that corporate America has gaslighted corporate America and the politicians. You see, when you talk about the deep state, you're not talking about the politicians who are elected. You're talking about all the faceless people who work in government. So you can, if you're an elected politician, you too can attack the faceless bureaucrats, all right? And so I think this is a matter of gaslighting, this concept of accusing someone else of what it is you're responsible for. Corporate America has succeeded in shedding its image as being the untrusted establishment and has transferred it to government. And government is, of course, the thing that gets in corporate America's way pretty often.
855-752-4842. We're gonna delve even deeper into this, because right now we're talking, and why this is important for you as an everyday citizen, is there's talk about dismantling the very government that you and I have grown accustomed to. That has basically kind of given us security in many aspects of our everyday life. 855-752-4842. It's Friday. I mean, Fridays with Sandy Williams and you on the Earl Ingram Show.
Listening to News from the Center, WRCE. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
WRCE 107.7 FM News, I'm Joanne Krulatz. U.S. Department of Agriculture, Rural Development Wisconsin State Director Julie Lassa has announced that the department is investing over $32 million to strengthen rural infrastructure and create more good-paying construction jobs in Wisconsin. Projects being funded include, in Juneau County, a $1.5 million loan will help the village of Linden Station make upgrades to the sewer collection and lift station system. In Oneida County, a $5.2 million loan and a $1.3 million grant will help the city of Rhinelander make improvements to water mains and sanitary and storm sewers. And in Vernon County, a $24.2 million electric infrastructure loan and loan guarantee program loan will be used by Vernon Electric Cooperative to help connect 801 consumers and build and improve 203 miles of line. This loan includes $2 million in smart grid technologies. Vernon Electric Cooperative is headquartered in Westby and serves on average 11,513 consumers through 2,180 miles of line through seven counties. An urgent issue faces farmers when they meet in Wisconsin Dells this weekend. If Congress doesn't pass an extension of the expired farm bill soon, outdated laws go into effect. Wisconsin Farmers Union President Darren Von Ruden explains.
We really need to make sure that the farm bill is there so that, number one, farmers have protection, but number two, consumers have protection too. And without it, we're both in trouble because people simply won't be able to afford to eat.
Von Ruden says going back to old 1930s laws doesn't work in today's economy. One example, farmers would be paid a set amount, but consumers would pay twice as much as the current price. He believes everyone will be hurt without any movement on the farm bill. For WRCE News, I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Variety reports that there will be a new version of the film American Psycho. Good Lord. Even though this doesn't need to happen on any level, a new interpretation of the novel of the same name will star Austin Butler as Patrick Bateman. The red-hot Luca Guadagnino will direct the film. Guadagnino's two most recent efforts are Queer, starring Daniel Craig, and Challengers, starring Zendaya. Both films were nominated for Golden Globes. And things a really talented and incredibly famous guy says that nobody cares about news, the great Elton John says making marijuana legal in Canada and the U.S. is one of the greatest mistakes of all time. Exaggerate much? John was recently named Time Magazine's Icon of the Year and told Time Magazine that as a recovering addict, he believes marijuana is addictive. I'm not saying when he wrote Tiny Dancer, Rocket Man, or Benny and the Jets that he was high, but he might have been high. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Partly cloudy today. We'll get to around 20 for a high this afternoon. Tonight becoming cloudy, 17 the low. Tomorrow, a little light snow in the morning, changing to rain by mid-morning with around a quarter inch possible by the time it ends tomorrow night. Our high tomorrow near 40. Sunday, cloudy with a high of 41. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. The temperature now is zero.
The Todd Alba Show.
Luke Matheris, you let the dogs out.
I let the dogs out. It was me. After about 15 minutes, I go out there and I'm like, what is this mound? An opossum playing dead in the middle of the yard. So I'm out there kind of hollering, like trying to corral the dogs. And then we finally got Aurora to come in the house, stepped away for a little bit, came back and was gone. I really hope that it remembers this traumatic experience and never comes back in my yard again.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Dom Salvia Show.
Harvey K., Professor Emeritus of Democracy. We're talking about the Act 10 overturned by a Dane County judge.
I think it's important for everyone to know that this was the state that in 1959 first granted public employees the right to organize and bargain collectively. We have a lot to take back. You know, I used to say take back America, but I say take back Wisconsin.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, Nikki Zurjev and I talk about our favorite comedies. Brittany Merlot gives us an overview of the weather this winter. And Terry Barr brings the tunes on a bar band Friday night.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Disruptive sector.
Education.
This is kind of dark stuff, Sandy.
I love Pink Floyd.
Right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, or you can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy, the music.
Yeah, it's all various periods of time, anti-establishment kind of music, stuff that was skeptical about the people in power.
So we were talking before the break about the establishment and what has happened and why, and then we're going to delve even deeper into it as we move forward.
To me, the term establishment is an interesting term because it denominates a faceless group entity that seems to be in control of things. And so it does matter to people what when they say the word or hear the word establishment, what is it that they envision the establishment being? And my view is that that image of who the establishment is has changed dramatically in the political scene, and we now have two different versions of it, depending on whether you're a conservative or a liberal. And with respect to conservatives, many of whom make up what we used to view as the establishment or what the left views as the establishment, the business community, the Main Street, Wall Street, Broad Street, K Street, they've all decided the establishment is the government. And others have decided that the establishment is corporate America and the people on K Street who are using corporate America's money to influence and have control over politics.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. And Brendan from New Jersey. Good morning to you, Brendan. You say what?
I just wanted to kind of come at it from a little bit of a different angle when we talk about the establishment and who they are and what they are. You know, I've been screaming for a long time about term limits in Congress and the Senate. And when, you know, the coddled America seems to react in such an un- and misinformed way as they have by putting this knucklehead in office, and now they're going to suffer the consequence. He's already admitted that grocery prices aren't going to come down. And I know that for a couple of my friends, that was really what they were voting for. They were tired of going to the store and paying so much for food and groceries. That was a big thing for them. And he just came out and just finally, and the more lies are going to start being uncovered. And what will the reaction of the American people be when we saw for weeks and months as he campaigned threats of civil war if he didn't win? And, you know, again, it's just coddled America reacting, knee-jerk reacting. If we had term limits for these positions in government, we wouldn't have communities settled back, letting the same person like Kennedy go into the Senate and try to embarrass a general that he's questioning and do things like this. And then not only that, but since there's money in government, you know, nobody kind of looks at that either and says once these guys get in there and they can keep getting voted back in regardless – and they push the local mechanisms that keep them in office going, then it does become the establishment. Instead of fresh new faces, local people without government, maybe some small local government experience, but going in with the concerns of the people that live where they live, it would be a better situation. And that's got to change. If it doesn't change in this country, we're going to be stuck in the same rut we're in right now.
Hey, Brendan, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, what's interesting to me is this definition of the establishment allows the politicians to be in neither group, okay? Because the politicians can point at the deep state as being their enemy as well, and the conservative politicians are very successfully doing that, talking about dismantling it, you know, and as if the people who operate within our government are the enemy of the elected officials. And so, yeah, the only problem I have with term limits is if it's a revolving door and people have two, let's say, can sit for two terms, will they be feathering their nest while they're in their position to, you know, I think what we need to do is police them and make sure they're responsive to the public. And maybe term limits will help do that. But we've got to find another way to get get the money out of politics to which they're responding, and to make them be, and the people need to organize so that they're actually responsive to the people.
You know, the chances, Sandy, of getting, you know, money out of politics is very remote at this juncture, because there's so much money to be made by the people who put money into politics that, and how do you defeat that?
And the people who get the money from, I mean, like, you know, the media, right? You know, media, the media's biggest income revenue season is election time, right? So,
I guess, Sandy, to me, it's almost a pipe dream to think we're ever going to get back to a point or get to a point where there's going to be money out of politics. The average everyday Joe who gives his $5 or $10 the Democratic Party asked if, well, maybe can you send us $3? And so the people send that $3. It's probably the best they can do, but they feel like it's they're being a part of something.
Yeah. Well,
the truth of the matter is they're not.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a big problem. It's probably something we can discuss on another show in depth, but clearly— everybody's frustrated by it, at least all the Tom, Dick, and all the people who don't live on K Street or don't receive the money from K Street, the lobbying sector, or from trade associations would like to see that power diminished. We got to figure out how to accomplish it, because, you know, I think there's actually, in the grassroots level, bipartisan support for that. Unfortunately, when you get closer to the top, the people who are involved in all that mechanism, not so much support.
Mike. From Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. Thank you for the call. You say what?
Happy Friday, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
You know, this is a great, great subject, and my guess is we could, or you could, spend a week or more delving into this, because it's time that we do. You know, and Sandy, I wanted to talk to you specifically on this. And this is, it's a two-prong question, if you will. But, you know, when we have talked about the Lewis Powell memo that was created in 1970, which was, in my description anyway, it was the establishment trying to reorganize and reboot, because the 60s and early 70s, you know, there was all, like you were saying, Freedom of Information Act was put in. There's all kinds of Democratic and protests and women's rights and civil rights and Vietnam, et cetera. Protesting was very commonplace because the people had enough. But I wanted to touch on the Lewis Powell memo, because to me, in all my years of research and trying to figure this out, that was a reboot of what to do when you've got all the money, but you don't know how to organize. And we've seen the results of it. So, Sandy, I wanted to ask you, how significant do you think the Lewis Powell memo was to where we are today?
So, first off, Sandy, you, for those who aren't aware, what is the Lewis Powell memo?
Well, let me ask Mike what he's referring to, because I don't have that.
Yeah,
Lewis Powell's was the Richmond, Virginia tobacco worker.
Right, and he was,
And so he was tasked by the United States Chamber of Commerce to consult, say, hey, and basically the Chamber of Commerce was asking them, you know, what to do. We're under duress, and their duress was democracy. People were organizing. People were active. People were on the streets carrying signs and having their, you know, voices heard. And so the Lewis Powell memo was his response to the question, what do we do? And if you're not familiar with this, you need to, you can find it very easily. And the significance is Lewis Powell was then, after he submitted.
Well, he becomes a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah. And all of a sudden then, that was the impetus for 84 different 5-4 decisions, with Lewis Powell having the vote, you know, to bring him over, you know, for a majority.
But you're, you know, what's interesting, you're right, though, that in the 70s, in the 60s and even in the 80s until Reagan decided to point the finger at government itself and bureaucracy. If you went out and asked people who the establishment was that they were concerned about, they would have identified Main Street. They would have identified Wall Street. They would have identified big business. They would have identified the people who they felt had great influence, General Motors, you know, the people who they thought were behind the scenes running the country and running the show. And who you have in mind as the establishment has a lot to do with where you focus your anger when things aren't going well. And what has been going on for now quite a long time is an effort by the people on whom that anger had been focused to refocus it, to find someone else to blame, to try and explain to the public why it isn't us, it's them.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for the call. You know, Sandy, what I will say to you and Mike and others is the late 1970s, early 1980s, where the early to mid 1980s, where this global.
Well, if you're going to talk about job migration, that period of job migration was not global. That period of job migration was from the northern states
to the southern states.
Anti-union. It was to right-to-work states.
Right.
And that was, at that point, workers all began to continue to believe that it was the corporate management, the corporate owners that were the villains.
But they were still in this country. The jobs hadn't left the shores yet.
They hadn't left the shores, but they'd left the city. When you lose your job, you don't care where it went.
Right.
It's gone.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that process was clearly the beginning. And layoffs, the notion of massive layoffs was something that didn't happen in the 50s. Didn't really happen much in the 60s, but it happened a lot. After that, and where the worker became the pawn, and the cost when you had to cut costs, you cut workers.
So we started looking at it from the perspective of we were losing our jobs, and so it wasn't somebody else. It was decisions made by fat cats to do away with the American dream of uneducated, for the most part, people who worked in industry, producing most of the things that our nation and it was able to produce to make sure that people inside of this country had everything that they wanted. All those things were made inside of our shores. Sandy, I guess the point I'm trying to make to you and to the listening audience is that, you know, to go from the corporations and the corporations that waxed very rich during that period of time, the middle-class American person started to suffer and struggle. And it's going on to this day. You're talking about now where we are, where somehow that anger and angst that the middle-class person had for the people who caused that pain to them, all of a sudden, Sandy, that became now it's the government and not the corporate leaders. We need to talk a little bit more and delve a little bit deeper as we talk about how this impacted the average citizen. Because at the root of that is why the Republicans and Donald Trump are in control.
Yeah.
Because the average citizen now believes that the government played the role in that.
Well, and also, I can come back to that, the reference to the Powell memorandum, but also Rehnquist, the two Supreme Court justices who had a lot to do with this shift.
855-752-4842.
News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Big news in Wisconsin this month, as much of the controversial anti-union Act 10 law was struck down in a ruling by Dane County Circuit Court Judge Jacob Frost. Two takeaways on this. One, the ruling gets at the heart of what has always made this law so brazenly political by defining public safety employees differently from general public employees. That decision was pretty clearly made not based on across-the-board policy, but on which unions backed Scott Walker for governor in 2010. It would be fitting if that is what ultimately spells the end for this controversial law. Secondly, this case is headed to an appeal, which almost certainly will end up at the Wisconsin Supreme Court. While this case still might be decided by the court's current 4-3 liberal majority, it's a good reminder of just how important the upcoming race for state Supreme Court will be.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us.
Ho-ho, the holidays are here, and it's time to pick a present from the grown-up gift list with Civic Media's statewide text-to-win contest. Listen while you work for the keywords to text for your chance to win $100 cash, an overnight vacation at Chula Vista Resort, and be entered to win one of the grand prizes, a robot vacuum, new luggage, humidifier, espresso machine, and more on the grown-up gift list at civicmedia.us. Just download the Civic Media app and listen weekdays at 7, 11, 1, and 4 for your chance to win in the statewide contest. Ho-ho-ho!
Max Inc. on Civic Media, live in the lair with Kaylin Cole.
Have you ever walked away from a karaoke performance thinking, yeah, that was a lot better than the original person?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I should admit that or not.
I think you should. Because now we know there's a song.
Jimmy's talking on it now.
I know. Oh, you're going to get me in trouble, Jimmy.
It's live in the lair. Grab the podcast now at MaxIncRadio.com and listen live on Saturday night, 6 to midnight, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. Working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school.
So this is John Lennon writing about the establishment, right? The working class against the establishment.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy Williams. And, you know, Sandy, what you were talking about, you know, the establishment, who and what that represents.
And I think, you know, to the right, to the people who voted for Donald Trump, it represents the government. And and it's being reflected now. The attack on government is part of the process of Donald Trump's cabinet appointments, right? He's appointed people to cabinet, to lead the cabinet agencies, each one of whom basically has announced that they have a negative view of the agency that they're taking over. So Peter Hegseth wants to get rid of many generals and to remarkably shake up the military. The head of the education department is someone who wants to get rid of education, you know, the education department. So what's happening now is that the appointments further reflect this notion that Donald Trump is the anti-hero who is going to lead the way in the fight against what is this big problem, which is government. And by government, they're talking about the bureaucracy, the bureaucrats, the deep state, the people who aren't elected to office but get hired by government to do the functions of government. And now he's talking about cutting back on banking regulations. I mean, we should talk about, because each of these agencies that he's talking about, their fundamental programmatic obligations are to protect the American people from some problem. So banking regulation is designed to keep us from experiencing the 2007 collapse of our financial system, which cost lots of people their houses and their jobs. The FDA is there to protect people from problems that might be associated with bad food. I mean, do we really want to cut out people who inspect meatpacking plants? Or where is this fat that is going to be cut out of these various agencies? and or do we want to eliminate agencies altogether, like the consumer, the finance, the Consumer Finance Protection Department, which they're talking about eliminating altogether? Does that mean that there's no concern Tom, Dick, and Mary should have about how they, what happens in terms of the terms of the consumer finance that they get? I mean, I just think that people need to wake up to the notion that they've maybe been gaslighted into believing that government is the enemy. I mean, I think streamlined, efficient government, good government, is the objective, but elimination of government, not a very good objective.
So some of these areas that you're talking about, Department of Homeland Security, the Education Department, the Veterans Affairs Department, these are all areas that Donald Trump's plan to overhaul these departments. Again, Homeland Security, Education Department, Veterans Affairs Department, Internal Revenue Service. I mean, you, if you just took the Internal Revenue Service by itself.
Yeah, I mean, but you're banking. I mean, Internal Revenue Service is designed to collect our taxes. Who do you collect most of the taxes from? The wealthy.
Right.
Okay? Because the people who have money are the ones who can afford to pay taxes, have money to pay. You know, like Jesse James said, you only rob banks because that's where the money is. Well, the taxation that brings most of the money into the coffers is the taxation of people who have more money. And so this notion of paring back on the IRS's capacity to adequately do that job is just contrary to good government. You know, a good government, one of the things that America has always been better than almost every country in the world is collecting taxes from people, not having a corrupt tax system in which people evade taxes. It's one thing to avoid taxes. It's another thing to evade taxes.
Health and Human Services Department, the State Department, the EPA, the Justice Department, the Interior Department, all of these are areas that Donald Trump has decided that need reforming.
Well, if reforming meant making sure that they operated efficiently to deliver the programs that are meant to be delivered, that would be one thing. But his notion, as at least reflected by his appointments to be the secretaries of these departments and also his discussion of the changes, is not to make sure that they deliver their programs efficiently. It's to destroy the programs.
Yes.
Okay? And so that's a different form of, that's not overhauling a department, that's undermining a department, okay? And that's different. And so my concern is not about making sure we have efficiency in government. Every business tries to become efficient and more efficient, and every government should try to be more and more efficient. But efficiency does not mean destroying the programs that are meant by Congress to be delivered to the people.
You know, if you just as an ordinary, everyday American really took some time to find out what Homeland Security actually does, the Education Department, I'm thinking that many Americans don't really know, because these aren't things that are talked about every day.
Well,
but the impact that these departments have, the State Department have in their lives, the EPA, all of these things have major impact in our lives on a daily basis. We just don't know. But we'll soon find out if any of these departments are altered to the degree that Donald Trump wants to alter them. 855-752-4842. Hold the thought. Guys, hang on the phone lines. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time. We will be live in Seattle, Washington for a special preview of the Packers taking on the Seahawks. Trigvi Olsen joins me live, as well as our sports reporter, Mike Clemens. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Jeffrey from Madison.
I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years. Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
In 1977, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike. With Act 10, now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits, so they basically turn public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. We know 2025 will bring a new presidential administration, but what will the new year bring for the nation's workers? ABC's Jim Ryan looks at new studies.
The great resignation that came during the pandemic has given way to what economists are calling the great stay. The ZipRecruiter survey of 2,000 companies finds predictions of a sharp decline in turnover in the coming year, with credit going to improved salaries, benefits, and work-life balance. But a separate survey by Glassdoor finds that turnover rates might be falling because workers feel stuck in their current jobs.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken made a visit to Iraq on his trip to the Middle East. He maintains the U.S. is determined to prevent the return of ISIS because of the new power vacuum in Syria after the collapse of Bashar Assad's government. McKinsey agreed to pay $650 million as part of a deferred prosecution agreement over allegations it helped Purdue Pharma sell more OxyContin despite knowing the dangers and risks. This is ABC News.